We welcome you. Wherever you come from, we welcome you. Whomever you love, we welcome you. My name is Melissa Carvel-Ziemer. It's my privilege to serve as the minister of this congregation. I'm joined in welcoming you this morning by Jeff Marsh, who's serving as our worship associate, Karen Labracco, our interim director of religious education, our music director, Hal Walker, and the Peace Pipers.
St. Augustine once said, "Miracles are not contrary to nature, but only contrary to what we know about nature." We light our chalice today in celebration of the wonders that touch our lives and lift our spirits, whether or not we fully understand the source of wonderment. Hanukkah. Come down from the hills, declare the fighting done. Be bold, declare victory, even when the temple is wrecked and the tyrants have not retreated. Only coiled back like a snake, prepared to strike again. Come down, try to remember a life gentled by daily acts of domestic faith. The pot set to boil, the bed made up, the table set in calm expectation that when the sun sets, we will still be there. Come down and settle, unlearn the years of hiding, light fires that can be seen for miles, that dance and spark and warm the frozen marrow, set lamps in the window, declare your presence, your loyalties, the truths for which you do not expect to have to die. It would take a miracle, you say, to carve such a solid life out of the shell of fear. I say you are the stuff from which such miracles are made. And I have felt a presence that disturbs me with the joy of elevated thoughts, a sense sublime of something far more deeply interfused, whose dwelling is the light of setting suns and round ocean and the living air, a motion and a spirit that impels all thinking things, all objects of all thought, and rolls through all things.
With these words from William Wordsworth, we invite you to settle yourself in for a time of meditation and prayer. We'll keep silence for a few moments together. As I invite you into a time of prayer, I would like to offer a prayer of presence. And I'm mindful that at this time of the year, one of the things that stands between us and presence is the crush of pressures, the weight of expectation that we have upon ourselves, that others bring to us about how it is we will be in this season of holidays. And so I invite you to take a moment to call to your own mind the particular pressures or expectations that are weighing most heavily on you. And then either hold them in the silence, or if you wish to, speak them aloud. Gracious Spirit of life and of love, we gather this morning in a busy time, in a busy season, carrying with us the burden of expectation. May this time and place help us to remember that which matters most, to set down the expectations we do not wish to hold, to set aside the burdens that keep us from being present to ourselves and to one another. Help us to set our sights once again on that which matters most, so that this season may be a time of opening hearts, connecting hands, reawakening love. Amen.
When I hear the word miracle, I cringe inside. This is usually in the setting and in a hospital conference room where a patient faces a difficult illness, and I am counseling the family to make a decision to set limits to care. When the question is raised whether to proceed with aggressive measures, the mere mention that the family believes in miracles tells me that I am going to have to step back and be patient. We will need to let the patient linger a little longer. Expectation of miracles is often a way to defer tough decisions. I am not entirely sure from where the insistence that a miracle will happen comes. Typically, the assertion comes from those of an evangelical tradition, but it does not equate with a lack of education. I don't know whether these families have ever seen these types of miracles before. I don't think I have. This is not to say that miracles don't occur. My own experience of miracles comes from seeing the nature of complex systems of the human body. The ability of a small group of cells to become a rose, to become a beloved pet, to become a human being is always somewhat miraculous. The human body's propensity to maintain its equilibrium and heal when injury or insult occurs is miraculous. There are so many times I've marveled in how some patients can continue to rebound when dealt a potentially fatal illness. My personal sense is that a desire for supernatural miracles arises from an experience of magic that comes from our childhood. Who doesn't remember the miracle of a magic trick when your uncle pulls a quarter out of your ear? When you see a woman sawed in half for the first time? When you climb out of bed on Christmas morning amazed that the cookies are eaten and Santa has delivered a load of presents? Magic fills the void when the world is bigger than we can understand, and that there is someone who is there to do the impossible. I remember reaching for my own miracle when my dad became ill with a brain tumor. He was a healthy, vital 71-year-old who immediately became a disabled aphasic man. He couldn't talk. He was totally dependent for his self-care. I held out all hope that surgery, radiation, chemotherapy would reverse the course and provide us with a miraculous cure, even though I knew that he probably had about 6 months to live. Weeks stretched into months, and he got worse. All the while, my mother took care of him at home and provided him comfort and dignity mixed with humor. Her resilience and perseverance was our miracle. When I hear people assure me that a miracle will happen, I now have to remember when I was on their side of the exam room. I still haven't seen the kind of miracles that they have in mind, but I do get to see miracles of patients and families clinging to the life they have with one another and sacrificing to provide their loved ones with dignity and comfort.
I once got into a fight over miracles. It was with one of my closest friends. I was in my early 20s. We lived a couple of hours apart, and she came to visit me. We were out for a hike. She started telling me about her faith. We'd been friends for a while, but this isn't a conversation that we'd had before. And there, as we walked through the woods, she told me that she believed in the miracles of the Bible. She had a PhD. I was stunned. Really? And so I proceeded to tell her that everything that's recorded as a miracle in the Bible really has some natural, biological, or geological explanation. It may have been unusual, but there is some explanation. She insisted, no, she believed in miracles. And despite my skepticism, went on to tell me a little bit about what they meant for her. But I couldn't hear that because I was so stuck on miracles don't exist. So we had a pretty serious argument. And I've thought a lot about it over the years because it strained our friendship. And I wonder, what could I have done differently in that conversation? Luckily for me, I had just begun hanging around Unitarian Universalist congregations a few years prior. And so I was just beginning an experience of growing in my own faith formation. I was just starting to learn how to read religious texts metaphorically. And over the years, I've learned how to listen for the truth in a story rather than just critically evaluating whether or not I believe a story to be true. Had I grown up Unitarian Universalist, that conversation that day in the woods with my friend likely would have gone very differently, because chances are good I would have already had some capacity by young adulthood to understand religious claims in a more generous fashion than I did, because I would have been exposed to the religious leadership of Sophia Lyon Foss. Sophia Lyon Foss was one of the most influential progressive religious educators of the 20th century, and she wrote a great number of curricula for Unitarian Universalist congregations in her later years, which were used up until the major rewrite that happened just in the last 10 years. So her work is infused in the religious education experiences that young people have received over the last decades. And Sophia Lyon Foss believed that the work of a religious educator isn't just to deliver content. In fact, it's not really about delivering content at all, but primarily about helping young people find the religious dimension in their everyday lives. And so she believed it was essential to help children cultivate the capacity for wonder. And the definition of miracle has to do with wonderment. If you look in the dictionary, you'll find the definition of miracle listed as a wondrous work of God. Depending upon how you define God, that can be a pretty broad definition. So miracle has a lot to do with wonder. Sophia Lyon Foss thought that instead of teaching children a story from the Bible, like a miracle story, which she did, and telling children what it means, that it was important to tell the story and then help kids connect to it personally, to find their own way into the story, their own personal connection, either from their own experience or through enacting ritual, like lighting candles, or using the arts to encourage kids to wrestle with the meanings of the stories themselves, not to evaluate whether or not they are true critically from a distance, but rather to step into the story and find the truth lying there for their own lives. So it's her method I want to keep in mind today as we consider the meaning of miracles. Our worship services this month are focused on the theme of expectation. And we decided to wonder about miracles today because the three holidays most commonly celebrated by Unitarian Universalists in December all have roots in the miraculous. Hanukkah, the winter solstice, and Christmas each have their own meanings and histories and are grounded in particular faith traditions. They can't be boiled down to a common denominator, and yet they do have something in common. Each in their own way, they're rooted in a story of a miracle. So let's start with Hanukkah. Hanukkah has two primary origin stories. One is written in the apocryphal book of Maccabees, 1st and 2nd. That text tells the story of the Greek colonization of Jewish lands and of a small band of Jewish fighters led by Judah Maccabee and his family, who rose up against the far more powerful Greek colonizers. And they won against all odds. Some who celebrate Hanukkah look to that story and they lift up the importance of maintaining and defending Jewish identity. Herschel's story that we heard last week and today is a kind of illumination of that theme. Herschel defeating the goblins so people can keep the tradition of Hanukkah reflects this strand of the heritage. Common interpretations of this strand include the importance of resisting assimilation and being dedicated to the keeping of Jewish traditions. But you'll notice there's nothing about a miracle in that story. The miracle is recorded in the other story of Hanukkah's origins, which is found only in the Talmud, the ancient collection of rabbinic writings on the Torah. So in the Talmud, the rabbis tell the story of the single jar of sanctified oil that the Maccabees found when they went to rededicate the temple after their victory against the Greeks. The single jar of oil was enough to only burn for one day, and they needed enough for 8 days. I really like the way that the Jewish teacher Alan Morinus interprets the meaning of that miracle. When the Maccabees found that they only had enough oil for one night, they could have succumbed in despair. Though they had secured a military victory, being there in the temple, destroyed and desecrated by the Greeks, and finding only enough sanctified oil for one night could have dealt them a spiritual defeat. But instead, they lit the eternal flame anyway, not knowing how it would endure. Morinus says that decision to trust in God to provide a way is when the miracle of the Spirit happened. I love that interpretation. There was enough oil only for one night. They needed enough for 8 nights, but they lit the flame anyway. And I love how that interpretation resonates with the way in which the candles are lit in increasing number on each night of Hanukkah. And I didn't know that the rabbis actually had an argument about this when they were establishing the tradition. There's an argument recorded in the Talmud between two rabbinic schools, the school of Shammai and the school of Hillel. The school of Shammai thought that the candles should be lit in descending order, so that on the first night of Hanukkah, people should light all 8 candles and then one fewer each descending night. They believed that doing so would accord with the fact of the miracle, the story of the miracle, that by descending number of candles, people would be experiencing the number of days left in the miracle. But the school of Hillel won, of course. The candles are lit in ascending order, one on the first night and one more each night until 8. And the reasoning of the school of Hillel was that growing rather than diminishing accords better with the ways of the human spirit. They said, in sacred matters, we elevate and do not lower. Each night of growing light invites the faithful to live more fully into the meaning of the miracle. And so I offer a blessing to those of you who celebrate Hanukkah. May you find meaning in the miracle and inspiration which lifts your spirits and leads you on. So turn now with me to the winter solstice, which I know many among us will be celebrating next week. Many Unitarian Universalists celebrate this holiday. It has a lot of resonance among us, especially among those who identify theologically as pagan. And interestingly, in recent years, it has also gained followers who are particularly humanist or atheist in their theological identity. Humanists and atheists in northern climates have been increasingly drawn to the celebration of the winter solstice as an opportunity to celebrate a holiday and this time of holidays that's utterly natural in its origins. It's a time to welcome the return of the light. And so they sit side by side in our sanctuaries and our meeting houses across the country with people who identify as pagan and look to the holiday as rooted in celebration of myths and symbols and rituals of people who experience the return of the sun as an annual miracle, a gift of the gods and the goddesses. In a time of hunger, cold, and dark, ancient pagan people experienced the return of the light and heat as a tremendous gift, a miracle of nothing less than life triumphing over death. For them, the return of the sun meant that life would indeed go on. One of the central metaphors that the contemporary pagan priestess Starhawk uses in her winter solstice ritual is the metaphor of birth. The burning of the Yule log throughout the long solstice night is a time of ritual preparation, releasing old energies and filling up again with new hopes. On solstice morning, the sun rises again, born once more out of the long deepening dark, and the faithful are renewed by their witness. With energy now growing again and in accord with the rhythms of the earth, the time is right to focus on bringing new visions to life. Now, I can imagine that some among us might say, as I did once, that there is no such thing as a miracle, only the universe doing what it does and people choosing to live in alignment with the earth forever turning. And another might say that though they are natural indeed, the assurance of light growing out of sacred dark and the persistence and flourishing in life are truly wonders, wondrous works, miracles worth praising. And so to you who will celebrate the winter solstice, I offer you a blessing. However you understand your celebration, may you find meaning in your observation and inspiration which lifts your spirits and leads you on. And then we come to Christmas. Most of us know that story very well, and we know that it is literally studded through with miracles. The miracles are proclaimed in the Gospels, and they are sung in the songs of the season, which you will hear whether you wish to or not. A virgin birth, God incarnate, the good news heralded by angels to humble shepherds, wise men traveling to pay the baby homage, and a star shining in the east to guide them on their way to the Prince of Peace, laying in a manger. In this story, miracles abound. I spoke last Sunday about the ways in which Unitarian Universalists have interpreted this story to emphasize the miracle of every birth and the attendant rebirth of hope again and again and again. We've also tended to emphasize the miracle of generosity and hospitality and the ways in which these prepare room in us, in all of us, for peace to be born. And we'll do that again this year in our joyful multi-generational service next Sunday and in our lovely Christmas Eve services. We'll tell the old stories and we'll make new meaning once again. So if you celebrate Christmas, I hope that you will join us and receive a blessing. May there be something in your celebration that lifts your spirits and leads you on. And may the spiritual gifts of the holiday linger in your heart well after the symbols of the season have been put away for another year. The holidays we celebrate this month share in common stories of miracles. Many people say that miracles have not ceased. What do you say? Are you expecting miracles? Once upon a time, I would have said no, but my efforts to find the truth in the stories have changed me. And my embrace of religious language has changed me. And so from my vantage point now, it seems to me that wondrous works, miracles abound. It's a wonder that you exist, or that I exist, or that any of us are here. It's a wonder that life evolved on this planet. It's a wonder that our universe is filled with such astonishing beauty. Friendship is a wonder, especially among unlikely souls. Love is a wonder even when it doesn't make sense, and maybe especially when it doesn't make sense. The spirit of life is an endless source of wonderment with its expressions of trust and praise and its unquenchable desire to share the gifts of this life. And so I've come to believe that our lives are filled with ordinary miracles, and sometimes those miracles are robed in extraordinary stories. So how about you? It's a season of miracles. Are you expecting any? I encourage you to take some time to ponder. May the peace of the dark invite you into wonderment, and may the sacred stories inspire you as they guide you into the growing light of another year. Amen. I've been touched this week, last week, to see the ways of generosity of the people of this congregation. The box of toys downstairs has been filled. The stars with the gifts for the folks in Miller House taken from the trees. We have enough to share, and we do so gladly. We take our offering this week and every week as a symbol of that equation of generosity flowing from gratitude. If you are a guest this morning, we have a gift for you. There's a candle in the basket. We welcome you, even as we welcome your contributions among us. The offering will now be gratefully received. Loving people with gifts to share in this world, a world which needs your blessings. So go now in peace and be a blessing upon the world.